to God, Connor, don't treat this like it means nothing. Dad, Maximoff interjects. I'm an adult. We're two consenting adults. There's nothing wrong, Reich points at me. He's your fucking bodyguard, Moffy. Lily pushes through the wall of men and stands right in front of me. Green eyes pained. I tried not to wonder what this moment would look like. Me hurting the one woman I spent years protecting. But I was on Alpha for 3 years, surrounded by all 6 of these people. Fuck, I knew how they'd react to any bodyguard sleeping with their children. I knew there'd be condemnation. I knew that in their eyes, I broke a sacred rule.
I matched you with my son.
Her chin tries to shake, but she sucks in a breath, raises her head, and pokes my chest with a mad finger.
I trusted you, Pharaoh. You looked me in the eye and you promised me that you'd protect him.
I did, I say from my core. I am. You took advantage of our son. Lo cuts me off. That's not protecting him. I force myself not to roll my eyes. I've been there for Maximoff Hale every fucking day, and I definitely didn't coerce him into sucking my cock. Maximoff groans into a frustrated growl. He didn't take advantage of me. Yes, I'm a celebrity. Yes, he knows private shit about me because he's my bodyguard. Did he ever use his position to seduce me or blackmail me or hurt me? Never. Rose perches her hands on her hips.
But we hire bodyguards to protect our children.
She sets a fiery glare on me.
Not fuck them. For your betrayal, your heart should be fed to the wolves.
She extends a hand to her husband.
The knife, Richard.
Connor lowers her arm. Let's shelve the hyperbolic murders, darling. Maximoff tries to steal his dad's attention, but it's skewering me. Dad, I'm 22. I make my own choices, and I choose him. How long? Lo asks me, ignoring his son to grill me. Did this start before you were assigned to him? No, I force the word. Lo considers this for a moment before saying, I don't trust easily. And I gave you as much as I give family, and you just shit on me, on Lily, for what? For what? I repeat with a shake of my head, for what? I'd do anything for Maximoff. I'm here, willing to sacrifice a career for him, because I care about him. I want to be with him. And I'm sorry that I broke your trust, but I can't lie to you or Lily. Given the opportunity, I'd do it all again. I'm in love with him. I haven't said those words to Maximoff yet, and he's not hearing them for the first time while I speak to his dad. Lo stands uneasy, but they all hear what I'm saying. I'm telling you right now, Maximoff says firmly to the room. You're not firing Pharaoh. None of you are. He's still going to be my bodyguard. Connor speaks. For that to happen, your relationship would need to remain secret from the public. Wright cuts in. Who the fuck said he's staying in the security team and on Moffy's detail? Who's going to fire him? Maximoff rebuts. You? Wright glowers at me, like he wants me to quit. And just shove another bodyguard into Maximoff's arms? Fuck no. I'm not quitting, I tell him. And we're fine keeping this from the public. You still crossed a line, his dad says. And there needs to be repercussions. Maximoff motions to Lo. Again, you're not. This is a security issue, his dad declares. We'll let security make the call. If they think Pharaoh isn't fit to be your bodyguard and it's too dangerous, then he's gone. And that's goddamn diplomatic of me. Before Maximoff speaks, I tell his dad, fair enough. I sound agreeable, but security has more reasons to fire me than they do to keep me. Plus, I'm betting Price and Thatcher would just love to replace me with an uptight do-gooder. Basically, someone who'd never lower their radios, argue, or have sex with a client. And I'm honestly not sure if Akara and the rest of Omega will vouch for me or turn their backs. My actions reflect poorly on SFO, and if they'd rather remain an untarnished, respectable force, they'd transfer me. Here's what I know. I can be fired from the whole team, just transferred to another person's detail, or they could put me on probation. It's all up in the air. 42. Pharaoh Keen. I have no gun and no radio. Security commandeered both while they evaluate my standing on the team. I accept change better than most people, so naturally I have trouble feeling dread when I meet a crossroads. But I see what I may lose. Almost like a cumbersome nostalgia, staring up at a beloved college and knowing in a minute I may never step foot on campus again. I may lose those late-night SFO meetings at Studio 9, The lighthearted jabs over comms, being kept in the loop on private issues. The overwhelming Cobalt Meadows and Hale pride we all share in this tight-knit team who willingly, wholeheartedly sacrifice their time and lives to protect three families. I zip up my leather jacket, a December wind rustling maple trees and sweeping through the Smoky Mountains. We're not at Camp Calloway anymore. When the camp away officially ended yesterday morning, Maximoff didn't want to return to Philly right away. There's only one place the families use as a sanctuary away from the media and public. A four-story lake house hidden in the Smoky Mountains. 50 miles of winding gravel and dirt reach a peaceful place the families visit for holidays and summer. The cherry roof blends into the thicket of maple trees, the leaves bright red before they fall. I've been here before. Only 1 mile to the east, they built another house for security. Essentially, we help keep the acres and acres of land private from the public and media, and any sightseeing cars looking to drive down random gravel roads. I descend the house's porch stairs and hill, heading towards the lake. Jane and Maximoff sit on the edge of the dock together. Glittering water reflects the landscape of mountains. What's noticeable? The distance between them. It's just a weird sight. Two bodies could squeeze in between theirs, and she's bundled alone in a quilt, not sharing with him. They're barely facing one another, but at least they're talking. The three of us, plus Quinn, are the only ones at the lake house. The media won't stop speculating about their so-called love affair, and Twitter even coined a name. Hashtag Hale Cosest. The actual Hale Co. is enduring a publicity nightmare. Since Maximoff's dad is the CEO, Lauren Hale is combating most of the fallout. When I reach the dock, Jane and Maximoff are in quiet contemplation. They've been acting tough, saying shit like, rumors happen all the time, and it's no different, and we can get through anything together. But this is the first attack on their friendship. Maximoff is about to stand when he sees me, but I take a seat close to him instead. Shoulder to shoulder, he wraps his arm around mine. Any news from security? He asks. Not yet. I notice his cell phone lying on the wooden dock. Black screen. With the amount of mayhem that's going on, the screen should be lit up with notifications. I raise my brows at him. You turned your phone off? This is a first. Jane tightens the quilt around her frame.
He just gave full autonomy to the COO of HMC Philanthropies to make decisions, and then he powered off his phone.
The COO has control for only 2 days, Maximoff clarifies. Then he speaks to his best friend. I'm not here to work. I'm trying to be here for us, Janie.
We're fine. We said we're fine.
She grabs a folded tabloid that she bought at a gas station and absentmindedly flips through the pages.
It means nothing.
Maximoff drops his arm off me, just to crack his knuckles. I need his shoulders, his muscle, extremely taut. I ask, then what's with the 5 feet of space between you two? Jane scoots closer, until she's only a foot away.
I feel strange knowing our parents and some family members believed we were sleeping together, not to mention the security team.
She sighs into a tiny growl, and then cringes.
Nothing has made me more embarrassed in my life.
Maximoff's face contorts, torn to shreds. He can't fix this by physically consoling Jane. That's the problem. I try to remind Jane. Omega didn't believe the rumor, Maximoff adds, and our family believes us now. Jane's big blue eyes lift to us.
Because you two kissed, not because they trusted us. And we did nothing to lose their trust. They projected their own pasts onto us like the media always does, and they should have never doubted us. They shouldn't have.
She emphasizes. I'm sorry. I apologize, as rare guilt gnaws at me. It's my fault. For one, I could have tried not to sink my teeth so hard into him. For another, the lie I created that night fueled their parents' doubt. The evidence they used against you. That's on me. Maximoff gives me a look. Pretty sure you're not the one who cradled her in your arms, kissed her cheek 1,000 times, put your arm around her.
We all played a hand in this,
Jane interjects.
But let's be terribly honest. This is the strangest situation we've ever been in, by far.
No shit. She skims the tabloid before pushing the pages to her chest.
Have you two seen the new Like Us article?
No, we say together.
Guess the title,
Jane says. Maximoff glares out at the water. Enraged like us? I think you mean strange like us, I tease. Jane nearly smiles, which makes Maximoff's shoulders slacken, and then she flashes the tabloid. Damaged like us. The photographs showed Jane and Maximoff from the camp away, him carrying her in a piggyback, him kissing her cheek, Jane hugging him around the waist, smiling and laughing, all twisted to fit the headline. I steal the magazine and throw that tabloid like a frisbee across the lake. I hear the plop. When I look back at Maximoff, he asks me, "If those pictures had been me and you, what do you think the title would have been?" I start to smile, and I tell him the first thing that comes to me. Lovers like us. 43. Pharaoh Keene. 8 a.m. at the lake house, I cook bacon and constantly glance over at Maximoff, bare-chested and dark brown-haired, disheveled. He cracks eggs into a bowl and tosses the shells in the nearby trash can. His forest greens flit back to me just as often. There's been no news about security yet, but it's too early to care. And I just enjoy this. A lot. A hell of a lot. It's the first time we've been able to cook breakfast together. It's also the first morning where it won't matter if security or family members catch us. They know the truth. Unflinchingly and resolutely, his gaze rakes down my chest and abs to the waistband of my black cotton pants. My smile stretches. "You just got a piece of shell in the bowl. Fuck." His head whips to the bowl. "I don't see it, man." He wipes his hands on a dish towel. I take the bacon off the burner, and then I near Maximoff. His hand slides around my waist, drawing me hard to his chest. Damn. I cup his ass and walk him back into the edge of the counter. His gaze devours mine before our mouths press in full-bodied hunger, heating and welding together. Fuck. I hold his sharp jaw to control the kiss. I catch his lip between my teeth, and a shallow breath jettisons his body. I whisper in the pit of his ear, "My clothes look good on you." He's wearing my black track pants. Maximoff slips two fingers in my waistband. "Perks of being the same size as my boyfriend." Hearing him say boyfriend out loud makes my smile widen even more. I'd say my wardrobe doubled too, but I can't wear his clothes in public. Tabloids and fans would notice, and even with the Hale Cosest rumor, they'd spin another story. Not letting go of the Moffy Jane love affair, but just adding me to the equation. Maximoff drapes his arms over my shoulder. "What happens if I get a new bodyguard? I won't be around you every day." "That's sweet that you like to visit these hypothetical alternate realities," I say. "But let's stick to ours, where I'm currently still your bodyguard." Maximoff grasps the back of my head. His grip is strong as fuck and his waist bows towards me. All of it. All of him douses me in gasoline and lights me on fucking fire. He breathes, "Who sucks whose cock at 8:12 a.m. in our reality?" I eye his beautiful, sharp cheekbones. "I can push you to your knees right now, but I'm thinking that you want to push me to mine." His dark brows furrow, feigning confusion. "How'd you know? You love your dick in my mouth?" "Pharaoh!" "That's Oscar. Security is here." I hear more than a few pairs of footsteps. Maximoff straightens up, preparing for another fallout where I'm terminated from the security team. I ease casually against the counter beside him, and I wrap my arm around his lower back, my hand on his hip, while he, of course, crosses his arms, biceps flexing, ready to put up a fight for me. That last thought wells inside me. He's ready to put up a fight for me. Oscar slips into the kitchen first, and he rolls to a dead stop, studying the scene, midway cooking breakfast together, bare-chested, and my arm is still around Maximoff. "Redford," Oscar says, forehead wrinkling as his brows shoot up. "Is he wearing your pants?" I roll my eyes, but my smile is fucking killing me. "We've been together for months," Maximoff says. "In my mind, it's been barely 2 days and you're already wearing his..." Maximoff cuts him off. "That's not fucking important right now." Oscar sets a hand on the island counter. "Moffy, you're underestimating how shocked we all are. I haven't been this whiplashed in a decade." He looks to me. "You reckless motherfucker, if I hear Alpha call you a maverick one more time over comms, I'm canceling your Netflix subscription." "You don't have my passwords, Oliveira." I gave him my passwords at Yale so he could use my HBO, but I changed those a long time ago. Maximoff drops his arms, about to leave and find Akara, but I catch his wrist to keep him here. My hand slips down to his, and then Akara enters the huge kitchen, Donnelly and Quinn in tow. Those two hang back at the island bar with Oscar, and the Omega lead nears me. Mafi, Akara says. You should step out. No, I tell Akara. He should hear. Maximoff crosses his arms again. Akara gestures to my chest. I've spent an accumulative 35 hours trying to convince two men that you're worth keeping around. Price and Thatcher. I fixate on the part where he tried to convince them to keep me. You wanted me to stay? You realize that I selfishly chose a guy over the team. Maximoff shoots me a look like I'm digging my grave, but I can't stop staring at Akara. Yeah, Akara says. And the four of us on Omega have all had the misfortune of knowing you before you ever joined security. Donnelly blows me a middle finger kiss. At 18, I met him in a tattoo shop. He was a 17-year-old tattoo apprentice who dropped out of high school. His parents in jail for meth. I let him do a few of mine, until he became better, then he inked more. And he used to crash in my dorm at Yale and streak the hallway for shits and giggles. Oscar I met at Yale, and then I met his brother Quinn. And Akara grew up two streets over from me. See, I didn't take these relationships into account, because I broke the unbreakable rule. Don't fuck your client. I'm not about to stand here and praise you for an hour, Akara says. What you did was shit, but you're far from incompetent. Alpha and Epsilon see you as a loose cannon. The rest of us on Omega, we know you as a good friend. I rub my jaw and nod more than a few times. Thank you. Donnelly holds out a hand to Oscar. We gotta thank you. Pay up. Fuck you, Farrell, Oscar says. Now I owe Donnelly $50 because of your gratitude. Told you not to take that bet, bro, Quinn says. I almost smile, but I remember that Akara is only one vote out of three as far as transfers and firing goes. He had to convince either Thatcher or Price to let me stay on the security team and in Omega. He never said he was able to. Maximoff stays on track. So what's his fate? He asks the Omega lead. Is he being transferred or fired? Price was a firm fire you. I'm around him a lot. He's been Daisy Calloway's bodyguard since he was in his 20s, and he just sees what you did as a violation of the parents' trust. I sink back against the counter. Fuck, I mutter. Maximoff grabs his phone off the counter. I'll talk to Thatcher and Price. He's supposed to stay out of the decision. That was his dad's stipulation. Let security decide my fate. No one in the family tries to sway or influence the team. You don't need to, Akara says with the start of a smile. I shake my head in disbelief. Thatcher would never vote to let me keep my job. There's one giant punishment and warning, Akara says. But Thatcher agreed with me that you should stay on Omega and remain Maximoff's bodyguard. Remain Maximoff's bodyguard. The three words ring in my ears until we're both turning towards each other, and Maximoff's arms wrap around my shoulders, mine hook around his, all warmth and muscle. His pulse beats hard against my chest. Remain Maximoff's bodyguard. We break apart about the same time Oscar says, yeah, still in shock. Donnelly hones in on Maximoff. You wearing Farrell's pants or what? Jesus Christ, he groans. You wearing Jesus Christ pants? Everyone laughs, but Akara is the first to speak as the humor fades. Did you hear the part where I said there's a punishment and a warning? I heard, I say. And I'm still not sure why Thatcher would vote to keep me around either. Akara combs a hand through his black hair. I reminded him that you just value the privacy of your client over sharing with the team, and that in reality, you're protecting your client in those situations. Mafi is an adult, and if he told you to keep a secret, then you should have kept a secret. After a while, Thatcher acknowledged that, whereas Price wouldn't. Damn. Am I going to need to send him a bottle of wine? What is Thatcher even like? No, Oscar says, and nears just to steal a piece of bacon off the pan. Listen to this next part. Maximoff passes his phone to his other hand. What? He asks Akara, who now looks at him. It's about me? I straighten off the counter. What's happening? Thatcher's going to be double assigned to Maximoff and Jane's detail, too. I rake both of my hands through my hair, blown back into the counter. Shit. That sounds unnecessary, Maximoff says. And my brother needs Thatcher. That's his bodyguard. Xander still has Banks as his 24/7 security, and after the rumor, Jane is going to need two bodyguards. Maximoff nods in agreement. Hey, I want to be clear here, Akara says. This is your punishment. Thatcher thinks you'll both be less careful about hiding a relationship publicly now that you can be together privately in front of family and security. He only agreed to Farrell being Maximoff's bodyguard if he could join and make sure you're not fucking up. I roll my eyes. He wants to be my chaperone? Basically, but for good reason. My brows spike. You agree? This is your warning. If the media and public finds out that Maximoff is dating a bodyguard, it doesn't just hurt you two. Maximoff frowns. What do you mean? What do you think your fans will do if they see that a bodyguard can date one of your cousins or siblings? Shit. Realization washes over Maximoff, too. They'll speculate which bodyguards will be next. They'll pair us off, Akara nods. It's not a far stretch when there are Tumblr sites dedicated to their love lives, making predictions about future relationships and marriages. And they'll be looking at which bodyguards are single and of age, and Omega is the youngest team. You left out attractive, I say. Pharaoh, I know. It's serious. None of us can become famous, or else we can't protect our clients. It's an age-old rule that has no loophole, like the one I broke. Maximoff puts a hand on the back of his neck. So, if anyone finds out publicly that I'm dating my bodyguard, it could put the whole team at risk. You'd all lose your jobs and be replaced by older, married security. Yeah, we have to be extremely careful in public. Quinn nears the fridge. Hey, I know I haven't been in security long, but I just want to say that I fucking like this job. We all do, Akara says to us. They're all letting Maximoff and me be together, and if we fuck up, it could potentially cost their careers. Fuck, I owe all of them. And I also say, we'll be careful. Maximoff looks to each guy. Thank you, he says so powerfully that the kitchen goes quiet. Many of the guys nod to him. Then the floorboards squeak in the silence, and we all turn our heads. Sully waves, and Maximoff starts to smile at his cousin's presence.
Security meeting over?
She asks.
We thought we'd help you all with breakfast.
We? Maximoff asks. Beckett Cobalt slips into view, darker and curlier than his fraternal twin brother Charlie, and his right arm tattoos are visible in a black muscle shirt. People call him the bad boy of ballet. Before Maximoff speaks, Jane swoops into the kitchen wearing kitten print pajamas.
Sis!
Beckett hugs his sister, and then to the right of their embrace, Charlie Cobalt saunters forward, yellow-green eyes only on Maximoff. I stand on guard, but Maximoff steps forward, his face solidified to marble. What are you doing here? He asks Charlie. Charlie never breaks eye contact. Being a cousin who didn't doubt you? Jane tears up behind him, and Beckett kisses the top of her head. Maximoff nods repeatedly, and he extends a hand to Charlie. His cousin clasps his hand, and they go in for a hug. People start moving around, exchanging hugs and hellos. The five Omega bodyguards and their five clients haven't all been alone together like this in a long time. Definitely not since I've been on SFO. Then everyone meanders around the kitchen, catching up and helping cook. I stand next to Maximoff and untwist a loaf of bread. More bacon, Oscar tells me as he eats all the bacon I just cooked. Donnelly already opens the freezer to grab meat and a bag of frozen biscuits. He hands them to Beckett. Quinn has another carton of eggs and starts to help Maximoff crack them into his bowl. Sully and Akara pull out dishes from the cabinets while Charlie and Jane chatter in French, making coffee together. We could have detonated the security team and his family, and like a strike of perfect lightning, we've brought all 10 of us closer together. And I have the guy. I have the guy. I extend my arm around his muscular waist, and he leans some of his weight against my side, relaxing. I begin to smile, wider and wider.
44. Maximoff Hale. I hike one of my favorite mountain trails with Pharaoh, not far from the lake house. Wind whistles through the towering fir and maple trees and rocky peaks, the last autumn leaves falling. Nature has nothing on Pharaoh. I'm highly distracted. Jet black pieces of his hair brush his lashes, his backpack buckled across his hard chest like mine, biceps bulging in his black long-sleeve shirt. Mainly it's how, as we trek up the steep incline, he lengthens his pace. And we're step for step the whole time, neither one of us falling behind. I think about that a lot. I think about how he called me pure of heart. I think about how it'll take time for my family to see him as anything other than my bodyguard. But me and him, we've seen each other as more from the beginning. I think about how he's helped me over a wall that I had never tried to climb. I think about you. And how I've been afraid to disappoint you. Maybe I still will, maybe I already have. But it'd take so much more than a wrong turn or a human mistake to ever disappoint him. I think about how there's only one person I crave to wake up to and see before I go to sleep. The agitating know-it-all who loves to irritate the fuck out of me. I think about him. So when we reach a clearing on a ridge, overlooking a vast backdrop of mountains and bright blue horizon, I forget the fucking view, and I just face Pharaoh. He bites the plastic water spout from his camelback, smiling. Seen the view 100 times already. The longer he stares into my gaze, the more he sees the emotion barreling out of me. His chest rises in a deeper breath. I need to tell you something, I say. He edges closer. Our hands brush and then clasp together strongly, gazes never dropping. Christ, let me say this right. In hindsight, I realized that I was envisioning a kind of person I'd want to be with for more than a day long term. You know, something... Fuck. I gesture in the air for the word. Lasting. Yeah. Lasting. Something indestructible. I hoped for someone who wasn't afraid to put me in my place. Someone who made me feel human. I hoped for someone who could be strong so I could be vulnerable, but still never make me feel weak or less than. I hoped for trust and understanding and an innate love of my family, and I realized Pharaoh. His hand slides up my neck to my jaw, his welling eyes already caressing mine. I realized, I breathe, that I was always hoping and wishing for you. Say the words. I'm in love with you, and I'm the lucky one here. He laughs into the most heartfelt smile I've seen. Both of his tattooed hands hold my face, our chests drawn together, and he whispers, "You beat me to it." He loves me. My face is just pure goddamn happiness. Well, you can't be first at everything. So one guy always tells me. One guy, Pharaoh repeats. Some damn guy, I rephrase, my hand rising up the back of his neck. The guy you love, Pharaoh teases. Then he licks his bottom lip, and his mouth veers to my ear. Holding my head still, he whispers, deep and protective, "I love you too." This has been an Audible Studios production of Damaged Like Us, written by Krista Ritchie and Becca Ritchie. Performed by Alexander Sindis and J.F. Harding. Executive producers, Susie Bright and Mike Charzik. Producer, Neil Basic. Copyright 2017 by K.B. Ritchie. Sound recording copyright 2017 by Audible, Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible, Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.